How will you disrupt yourself? How will you disrupt yourself? How will you disrupt yourself?
On today's show,
there's got to be a lot more trust in relationships, not in power, and that's been a big shift. So instead of being a power broker, you got to be a relationship broker, and you got to show employees that you're on their side, you got their best interest at heart, and the job of managing is less controlling as much as it is coaching, maybe counseling.
Welcome to the Disrupt Yourself podcast. I'm Whitney Johnson. I think, write, speak, and live all things disruption. My guest is Bob Nelson, president of Nelson Motivation, Inc., and considered to be one of the world's leading experts on employee motivation. Dr. Bob Nelson, it is such a pleasure to have you on the podcast today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Whitney.
I'd like to start off by asking you where you grew up and what you thought you would be when you grew up.
Well, I'm a military brat, so we moved every 3 or 4 years, and was born in Southern California, and at one point lived in Paris, France. Other than that, some exciting places like Salina, Kansas, and Minot, North Dakota, Warner Robins, Georgia, all military bases. So I think my earliest recollection of what I wanted to be was a preacher. I'm not sure why. I was went to some religious schools, so that probably had an impact. I like to think maybe I've got a gospel of sorts now with my writing.
That's so interesting. So when you were growing up, you wanted to preach, be a preacher, and now you preach the gospel of, you have a brand new book that's out called 1001 Ways to Engage Employees. And so you preach on employee engagement and employee recognition, right?
Yes. Actually, this is my 30th book. So I've done a number of 1000 Ways books, as well as the Management Bible. I've done 3 Managing for Dummies books, or Dummies books, Managing for Dummies, Consulting for Dummies, and Recognizing and Engaging Employees for Dummies. And then some others along the way as well.
So in other words, you're no dummy, is what you're telling me.
Oh, I don't know. I try.
You know, you've written, like you said, 30 books, but your focus has been on employee recognition. What led you to focus here? How did this come about?
Well, it's interesting because I mentioned my father was in the military. I was actually born when he was flying. When he got back to the base, they always had a little ceremony for life milestones, like birth of a child. They handed my dad a little silver cup, and there was a visiting general that was visiting the squadron, and he stopped the proceeding. He said, "That's not the way you do recognition," and he did it over and showed him how to do it, and he included a whole context. He said, "Captain Nelson, the jobs that we're doing defending our country, we can't be there during a life's milestones. A birth is a major milestone, and we appreciate this event where you and your family," and just made a proper presentation. That's how you do a presentation. You give meaning and context. So obviously I wasn't there, but I heard the story. And along my journey, I had the good fortune to work for 10 years for Ken Blanchard, who wrote The 1 Minute Manager, of which the first secret of 1 minute managing was 1 minute praisings. I subsequently had working on my doctorate with Peter Drucker, got further entrenched in reinforcement theory, and it just always made sense to me that treat people right and do that well, and it'll make a difference. And subsequently, I've been able to find research that validates that common sense notion that thanking people is important and the impacts it can have. If that happens, the benefits include employees will be 5 times more likely to feel valued, 6 times more likely to recommend the business as a great place to work, and 7 times more likely to stay with the organization for the rest of their careers. So huge benefits from doing this simple common sense notion of thanking people.
So when you went into your PhD program, was this the question that was on your mind, or did you have a different question?
It actually was. I knew that reinforcement theory worked. We have hundreds of studies that say you get what you recognize, you'll get more of, proven. So I knew that that was the case. What I didn't understand is, why is it so few people use it or use it well? And so my question was, and I think the best research is around simple questions, was why is it some managers use recognition, even if they don't have tools or programs or budget to do so, they still made it happen. And other managers, you give them all those things. You tell them it's important. We want you to do it. Here's a budget for doing it. Here's some tools. Here's some programs you can nominate people. And they still don't do it. So I took a deep dive into trying to find, go into the minds of managers, say, what is it that triggers people to actually take this seriously and make it happen? So I did a 3-year study where I looked at 47 national organizations, and in each of them, I identified managers that were good at recognition and compared them in the same organization to managers that didn't do recognition. It took me about a year to set the whole study, and then I looked at 169 variables to see what differentiated those two groups, the doers and the non-doers. And that was the study, and the results I still use to this day because they were again, rang true. And I spend most of my career trying to help organizations with those variables to make it a reality of where they work today. In a nutshell, my findings were that for managers that don't do recognition, there's a lot of reasons, starting with they don't know how to do it well. They really don't believe it's that important. No one does it for them. Of course, they're busy, and who has time to do things that they don't believe are that important to begin with, right? And then, and on and on. They're afraid of leaving someone out. They're afraid that, you know, they felt HR should do it for them. A lot of reasons that hold managers back, that make them feel that it's not important, it's not their job. For the managers that use recognition, I found there was just one variable going on, which is kind of exciting, just one thing. And that is that they had all, almost to a person, had internalized the importance of the topic. They felt that as a manager, as a leader of their people, they're also in charge of the motivational environment, the tone of what it means to work for them. And they took that seriously.
All right. So here's the question. I'm a brand new manager. I'm a brand new leader. I've got people. I've just hired them. Or I'm a brand new leader. I've got people, you know, all along my learning curve at the low end, the middle, the high. And I'm saying to you, okay, Bob, what do I do to recognize my people? What are your three top tips?
The top tip would be just start saying thank you in a sincere, specific manner. When someone does a good job, they finished a project, they volunteered for an assignment, whatever it might be, just to thank them. Make that part of your behavioral repertoire, systematically thanking people when you see good work, when you hear about it, when you read in a report, when you hear from a client, you mention it to the person. That would probably be number one. Number two would be to talk with people about this, to see how they like to be recognized. Because it varies. It varies widely. And you'll be more on the mark if you do things that are important to someone. So public praise is generally important. But if someone's an introvert or if they're from a different culture, often that's not valued. And so you got to find out what things does it for them. And then do those things when it's deserved. And just doing that well, whatever you do, to get feedback from them. In anything, in any skill, you've got to constantly get feedback so you can do it better. You can't just try it once and say, well, that worked, that didn't work, I'm not going to do it again. You got to learn from it. And if it didn't work, say, how could I have done that better? What would have been more special for you?
I had just the other day someone say to me, you know, people have been saying, thank you, you're awesome. And she said, you know, that's actually, I mean, I like hearing that I'm awesome, but it's not very helpful. And so you just said something I thought was really important is not only to say thank you and not only say it publicly, depending on the culture, or, you know, whether a person's extrovert or introvert, but also to be very specific. Any thoughts there on how to give specific recognition?
Absolutely. And that's part of the sincerity of it, that if you're just making generic comments, it doesn't ring true. And some managers say, oh, everyone's doing a great job. Well, probably everyone isn't. You know, some people are doing a fantastic job. Someone probably is working there you should have fired, you know, a month ago. Part of the credibility of a good praising is specific. So giving them the evidence of why you feel they're doing a good job. What did you see in the work? What did you hear from the client? What impact did the job have? So a good praising is done soon, and timing's important. The closer to the activity that you're trying to reinforce, the more it's going to likely happen again. Sometimes if you wait too long, it's more of a disconnect. You know, this person doesn't remember what you're talking about. What project? You know, oh, that one. Oh, yeah. Okay. So timing's important. It needs to be sincere. Part of sincerity comes from specifics, that you're using the evidence of what specifically you saw that they did that so well.
Which takes a little bit more work, doesn't it?
To
take the time to think about, okay, specifically, what did this person do and how can I give them concrete evidence of why I'm thinking and recognizing them? Takes more work, but probably valued much more.
So that's why you've got to kind of constantly be in the back of your mind, on the lookout for opportunities to acknowledge people. And then I'd say the other important part of a great praising is providing the context that I mentioned earlier, that of why what you did is important to our group's goals, the core values of the company, the commitment the person made. Giving that context makes it more powerful, more meaningful, taking the time to tell them.
It's really valuable. So we just finished this big event in Boston where Marshall Goldsmith, who you coach, and I did presented the information on building a team and on stakeholder-centered leadership. And one of the people on my team, Melissa Ruddy, did such a good job in managing every single last detail. And I've realized that I've said thank you, but I probably haven't been so specific in saying thank you, so that all of those details that were so important to having a person actually having a great experience or not were all in place. And so I'm giving her a public shout out right now, but it's a reminder of listening to you of like, I need to do the work of being not only saying thank you, because I think I do that pretty well, but being more specific with the praise and concrete around it.
And if that was a significant achievement, you can go beyond the thank you, you know, and reflecting and say, you know, you really did go all out. I know you spent a lot of your personal time. I'd like to do something to pay you back for all that. And what would be meaningful to you? Or take your spouse or significant other out for dinner and bring me the receipt. Or the more you know about them, the more you can pick something you know will be on the mark. But otherwise, you can try to suggest things that you'd like to do for them to basically put back the goodwill that they shared in going out of their way to do a great job for you.
Can you think of a moment in your life, in your career, where someone recognized you in a really meaningful, concrete, properly or contextually proper way, where you're just like, yeah, like that person got it and it really meant something to me? Can you think of one example in your life?
I'm a writer by profession, so when someone speaks out on and tells me how my book helped them, that always resonates with me. I remember once being at a conference and someone walking by and like 10 people deep and saw me and came over and said, "Your book helped save my marriage." And I'm like, "What?" And he said, "It's I know it was meant for employees, but it got me to see something I didn't see before about the importance of relationships." And you know, for most of us, often the people that are most important to us end up getting the dregs of what we have to offer, because they see us when we're exhausted and burnt out. And so just, you made me realize I need to be treating, my people most important to me with that amount of respect as well.
It's interesting as I think about millennials, and it's, you know, anecdotally, it's the everyone gets a trophy generation. Do you feel that millennials did or have received more recognition growing up? And if so, are they making better managers because they're more comfortable and more aware of what recognition looks like? Or is the inverse true? Or is it probably somewhere in between?
I'd say yes and yes, that they were labeled the trophy generation. And I think that there's a lot of truth to that. We want the best for our kids, you know, but they are misunderstood because of that. That there's a sense of that they have to be puffed up and they got a frail ego. You got to be careful how you deal with them. And it is a fact that they expect recognition, and actually they expect it more frequently, even on a daily basis. I was on CBS 60 Minutes on this topic. And when they called me, I said, I'm not a millennial. Sure, you got the right person. They said, yeah, we're absolutely true. Because from their research, one of the defining characteristics of the generation was that they expect recognition on a daily basis. So that could amplify the fact that they're spoiled and they have to be the center of attention. But what I've learned on the topic is that that's not what's going on at all. It's because they're bright enough and resourceful enough to know that what you expect them to do tomorrow might be different than what you expected from them yesterday. That work is a dynamic function today. It's constantly changing. Speed is great. That they're smart enough to realize that they got to be on point to know if they did something right to do it again. And so it's not just because they want to be puffed up. It's that they want the feedback.
Fascinating. So it's not a neediness. I mean, it could be a neediness, but what you're saying is they're saying they're used to instant feedback and they know that there's a dynamic or dynamism to the workplace. So they want the feedback so that they can improve more quickly is what I'm hearing.
Exactly.
You say.
And so to be in a job where your boss goes, well, here's your job description. I'll check back with you in 12 months and we'll go over and see how you did. It doesn't make sense to them. It doesn't make sense to anyone. I don't know. I got to have constant feedback. Otherwise, they're not good at operating in a vacuum. And I'm not sure anyone is good at operating in a vacuum. That they need that feedback. They not just praise, but feedback. And they need it instantaneously.
So have you ever seen the TV show The Office?
Yes.
Okay. So they frequently engage in activities that would fit into your low-cost recognition ideas for his employees. What advice would you give Michael Scott and Dunder Mifflin to help them become better managers, both in terms of recognition and the topic of your new book, 1001 Ways to Help Engage Your Employees? What advice would you give Michael Scott and Dunder Mifflin?
Well, of course, it's all facetious, but in the show, they're all trying too hard. Every little thing is a major thing, and it's much ado about nothing. So it's you got to give people space. No one likes to be micromanaged. And so if you have a little bit more trust and then follow up on reinforcing the positive, you're going to end up with more people doing more things better. And actually, of course, that shows a spoof, but there are a lot of managers that I feel that, you get a job as a manager and initially you want to prove yourself. But for a lot of people, the way they prove themselves is I got to show I'm the smartest person in the room. And so they're constantly on the hunt for mistakes and problems and they fix things, they take work assignments back and do it themselves, stuff like that, and micromanage. And that, of course, drives everyone away from them and undermines any authority they might have had. You got to give people their space and encouragement, let them have their own input and on the assignment, and then reinforce what they did well and guide them from a distance.
That's really interesting, Bob. So that to me so that's your advice to Dunder Mifflin. And I think one thing that you just said that really to me is the money shot around this and the rub and in Dunder Mifflin or just in life generally is that if I were to guess the number one reason people don't give recognition, not even I don't know how, but it's the I don't know that I am myself doing a good job. And in order for me to somehow believe that I'm doing a good job, I can't give away any power by telling other people that they're doing a good job. And so the very act of not doing that erodes that power. Is that right? I mean, is that in your research the number one reason?
Well, you hit it on the head, the whole concept of power. It's all a power balance. And if I tell you you're doing a good at something, I gave up some of my power because I got to control you and control the situation and be the person in charge. All that doesn't work today.
Did it ever work?
I think it did to accomplish the goals in terms of a very hierarchical or in the army, you want commands flow down from the top and you want everyone doing what they're told and you want a sense of we've got a clear plan toward victory. And as organizations used to be more from that structure, in fact, the original corporation modeled the U.S. Army type thing. And so that made sense in staid, predictable times, which we're not in now. So in more fluid times of constant change and speed, there's got to be a lot more trust in relationships, not in power. And that's been a big shift. So instead of being a power broker, you got to be a relationship broker, and you got to show employees that you're on their side. You got their best interest at heart, and the job of managing is less controlling as much as it is coaching, maybe counseling. Peter Drucker defined management as getting the work done through others. It's not doing it for them. It's not forcing them to do it. It's getting it done through them. So helping them doing it as best you can.
You've pivoted a little bit and written this new book on 1001 Ways to Engage Employees. Tell us why that book and what are some things that we might want to know?
The book is a research-based book that has the top 10 categories that most impact engaged employees. And of those, number one is recognition, which accounts for 56% of one's feeling of being engaged at work. It makes sense that am I valued by my boss and others for the job I do. If you do that well, you're more than halfway there to having a highly engaged employee. It's been a hot topic in American business for the ability to have people do more than you're paying them for, essentially, if they're truly motivated and engaged. And the opposite is true in the American workforce right now. In fact, for the last 20 years, there's been on average about less than a third of employees that are deemed engaged, according to the Gallup organization. The two-thirds of employees are either not engaged or actively disengaged. They really do not care. Now, where's my paycheck kind of thing? So it's a big problem. It has a huge cost to the American economy. And so I wanted to weigh in to say, hey, here's from what I have to offer. Here's a clear research foundation. And then, as is common for most of my books, I paint the picture with real examples from actual companies as to what it looks like to do those different variables. One's an immediate manager, the tie to strategy and mission, the job itself, the content, the tools to do the job, relationship with senior management, open and effective communication, one's coworkers and availability of resources, and ultimately the organizational culture and that you're a part of that's been created. So those are all kind of different variables. Together they form a tight fitting glove. If you're firing on all those cylinders, you're going to have people that are more likely going to be highly engaged in the job they're doing.
So you said that recognition was 56% of the variable that contributed 56% to the satisfaction on the job. Is that what I heard you say?
To the engagement of any worker,
yes. Engagement on the job. Okay, got it. And then what was second after recognition?
Career development, actually, and everything that wraps
the learning
around
curve.
That. Yeah, well, it's sort of like, for example, in a study I looked at of recent graduates, 100,000 recent graduates from over 1,000 institutions, the career development, the chance to learn new skills, the career path actually ranked higher than what the salary was for the job for the current generation. And other things, in having a mentor, being able to learn new skills. And in many ways, if you offer those, then they're again smart enough to know that if I have the skills and have the opportunity, if there's a future here, then I'll be paid accordingly as I advance in the organization. So there's a little less focus on I've got to get it right now than if I'm in an environment that supports who I am, if I'm learning from my manager, if other people are interested in my future, that could be even more important.
Right.
So career development has been a big one. And I find that, again, the old line company, they have them do that in their own time, or maybe they will, okay, we do a tuition reimbursement program. Well, that's like a toe in the water. There's so much that you can do to help people learn and grow. And that could start with the first conversation you have with a new hire. You're here for a job, but let me tell you, you do a good job, and that's job number one, doing good work, but here's where you can go in our organization. And by the way, my job is to help you get there. So, that could be the first conversation. Then all of a sudden, you're in a very different place than just getting a paycheck.
Yeah, absolutely. I asked you this question earlier about recognition. If I were to say, okay, lightning round, give me one or two tips to engage my employees, like really concrete tips. One of them is probably going to be to recognize them. What would be the second tip be?
I say, listen more than you talk. That in itself shows support, trust, respect. Those are all big variables in having someone feel valued. Or Stephen Covey used to say, focus more on understanding before you focus on being understood. I think that goes a long way in any relationship of showing that the person's important to you. Through all your behaviors, each behavior you do, it shows trust and respect and value, or it shows disregard. And, you know, so how do you treat people when you're upset, when you're angry? Well, if you vent and you swear and you embarrass them in front of their peers, you just dump the trust bucket. You know? Mm-hmm. You showed your stripes that you feeling good for a minute is worth more than respect for their relationship. And that there's less tolerance in that in the workplace today. And if you're doing that to a millennial, yeah, don't be surprised if they quit, you know, because they've got enough respect for themselves that if that's the value you have for them, then they're definitely in the wrong place. They're going to go find a better job. And that's one of the cautions to, you can, on the spur of the moment, do something that makes you feel good and validated as a leader. You were right. That is another one. You know, when someone makes a mistake, how do you handle that? Well, you can prove yourself right. Well, bravo, you know, or you could say, take a breath and say, you know, I'm not sure I would have handled it the same way, but what'd you learn from that? And that could be the best training we gave you all year. I'm glad you made that mistake. Bill Gates at Microsoft used to say, you can tell a lot about the long-term viability of any organization simply by looking at how they handle mistakes. So it's those simple insights that you hold those dear. You can remember to respect the other person, especially in tough circumstances, especially when you're in front of someone else. And again, that's going to serve you the best in the long term of that relationship.
So you have worked with 80% of the Fortune 500 companies. Is there an assignment or some work that you've done that you can disclose that's been an assignment work that you were just like, wow, that was so satisfying to see how that went down in the work that I did with this organization?
Oh, I love, thank you for that question. And I love it. I'm working with some great companies right now. And I find that because I do this so much, I see very clearly where they're missing the best intent, and I can help them, guide them. It's one of the values when you become entrenched in a topic that you can see with clarity what other people are too close to see. And in general, without calling out any specific companies, I say in general, the whole industry of recognition rewards, which is a $90 billion industry in America, has been, it's been the tail wagging the dog that in the whole history of the incentive industry, we've had vendors that in an army of salespeople that are pushing merchandise and trips and things that cost money on companies and convincing them that this is what will tell your employees that you value them. You know, give them points so they can get a plasma TV. Now they'll really work hard for you. And I see corporations spending millions and millions of dollars on this is probably the most common thing that I see. Millions of dollars in programs and tools and point systems and gift cards. And then on their employee surveys, employees report they don't feel valued for working there. And management goes, well, what the heck? The ingrates, you know, we're doing all these great things for them, and they don't count those things. It's like, well, they don't count those things because it's not those don't touch them. Those aren't the ones that are important to them. What's more important are, believe it or not, the things that don't cost a lot of money, the things that are behavioral that then be done by their immediate manager or upper management, things that, as you mentioned, take a little thought, maybe a little preparation, capturing the moment in the moment. You don't have to give someone a plasma TV. And if you're paying them well and that was important to them, they probably have that one already. So, having the respect of your manager, having a future in the company, being listened to when you have an idea, being encouraged to pursue that idea and supported with resources and authority to make it happen. Wow, those are some big, big things that send a big message to someone that not only are you important, but your ideas are important, and having you on it for us is invaluable. And thank you so much for doing that.
Have you had something recently where you saw that play out as you've worked with a company? I know you're not at liberty or prefer not to name names, but can you think of one thing where you went in, you did the work, and then something magical happened?
Yes. I had a recent company, had 1,600 stores, a $6 billion company. And first day they hired me and they asked me, we're thinking of doing this. What do you think? And I said, I would not do that. The first sentence out of my mouth, I saved them $400,000 because what they were doing was a mistake. You know, they wanted to do, they're doing a years of service thing, and they're going to shift to giving them Expedia cards so people can travel to destinations. And I said, you know, I looked over all your survey information. I didn't see anyone saying they want the company to pay for more vacation travel for us. Don't be giving them things that they don't want. Stop and see what they value, and then start giving them those things. And so they held off on that. And then the whole thing was displaced. In most corporations, I find there's a huge disconnect. They say one thing's important. Here's our strategic plans. Here's the numbers we're trying to reach. And then they end up recognizing something that's unrelated to that. Years of service, birthdays, holidays. Who cares? If recognition is the most powerful driver of human performance, use that to drive the things that are most important to your mission and your business, and people will respond. You know, I mentioned Ken Blanchard that I worked with for 10 years. I helped him with do 7 of his books. I remember once we were driving together, and in One Minute Manager, he had these little plaques, these little sayings, and one of them was that people that feel good about themselves perform better. And he told me, Bob, we got it wrong on that one. It's not people that feel good about themselves perform better. It's that people that perform well feel great about themselves. We have to, the job as leaders, as managers, is to help people be performers. You do that, and they're going to love working for you. Mm. You can show them how they can be better for you and for them. It's going to impact their future.
Who is someone that you need to or would like to recognize right now while we're talking in a very concrete, contextual sort of way as we start to wrap up?
A person that you already mentioned that is important to both of us, Marshall Goldsmith, has been a true visionary. And I've told him this, by the way, too, that I'm drawn to him for his simplicity of concepts, of proven concepts, and his diligence in pushing the agenda to help people. And we both are part of the benefit of that. And the whole idea of bolstering people and helping link them to each other, such as we're doing right now, goes well beyond being a servant leader. It's truly being a force out there for good. That's a big one. And I cherish Marshall for the things that he does and for who he is and for his insights and for his constant striving to spread the word and build a bigger legacy.
Such a great example of you just recognized him and you've coached him, but he's also coached you. And I think that's probably the best coaching relationships are like that both parties really benefit. Dr. Bob, I'm going to call you Dr. Bob instead of just Bob. Thank you so much today for joining us. I think that our listeners are really going to benefit from hearing you talk about how we can recognize, and I will try to wrap things up by being contextually specific in my recognition of you. I appreciate, actually probably 6 months ago now, we had a very long and in-depth conversation about books and how to put books into the hands of people and how to, in a setting where people don't necessarily have the budget to pay you, to be able to have a conversation where there are ways for them to buy books and then pay you by buying the books. And I have been able to implement that to very good effect in one event in particular that I can think of. And so I wanted to thank you for that advice in giving that and sharing that with me. So again, thank you. And thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Whitney. And any time I can help you, you know, the door is always open.
Thank you. It never ceases to amaze me that something so simple, expressing sincere gratitude, makes such a huge difference in your success when it comes to leading a team. Such a small thing. But small things yield big results when practiced consistently. Another common sense takeaway, give concrete reasons for your appreciation. Also, ask your employee how they would like to be recognized. We can't expect that we will know our employees well enough to read their minds any more than we can expect that we can read the minds of our loved ones. And asking, perhaps by leading with a couple of thought out, if generic suggestions, how our employees want to be rewarded helps them be seen. Like with the story I told about Melissa going above and beyond to craft a lovely experience for my workshop attendees. I've said thank you, but I now know I can take it a step further. Practical tip. Take a few minutes and brainstorm. List three things that have been done for you in the last day or two. Send an email expressing gratitude specifically for what that person did and how they helped you. If appropriate, ask how they would like to be recognized for their help. On that note, I want to say thank you to Jay Carr and S. Cleffa. I know these are abbreviations of your names, for your recent iTunes reviews. Our team, led by our production manager, Macy Robison, works very hard every week to produce an interview that will both instruct and inspire. That you would take the time to leave a review when you have a million things to do, we are all very grateful. Thank you again to Bob Nelson for being our guest. Thank you to sound engineer Whitney Jobe, manager, editor Macy Robison, content contributors Emily Davis and Libby Newman, and art director Brandon Jameson. I'm Whitney Johnson, and this is Disrupt Yourself.